Today is December 27th, 2017, and this is episode number 443 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I feel like Santa Claus today, even though it's 2 days late. Make it three, and I blame the international date line. And the Postal Service. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, head over to Facebook, our new Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/context machine. We'd love to hear from you. You guys can yell at us, cheer us on, offer some ideas,
offer counter
thoughts, support, to each other, to us.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
You know who else needs support right now? Self-help group is what I'm thinking.
Oh wow. Okay, the list is long.
it really is in the closing days of 2017, but no one's gonna nominate Apple.
Oh, Apple. Okay. So what has Apple in a position where it's time for a little intervention?
Apple has been engaging in some self-harm.
Oh, they have.
They really, really, really have. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. And we, to be fair, we've talked about this on TDO. Mm-hmm. Did we mention it on the last ACM?
Dude, that was like a week ago.
I know. There's like a big holiday and, food in between them. we had an extra day off. Although, I do hate it when Christmas Eve or Christmas Day is on a Saturday or Sunday, because it just,
Yeah, I'm with you.
Robs us of that extra day off.
And it actually makes it really hard for me to keep track of the days all the way through New Year's.
Always, for sure, no matter what day it comes on, to be honest. Anyway, whatever, Apple, self-harm. So there's this whole thing, right? Apple was slowing down some old iPhones. Let me retract that. Apple was slowing down some iPhones that had batteries that had degraded. Degraded, by the way, is the word I've been looking for like a week.
Oh, degraded. Okay.
Right? Degraded. I've been looking for that word for a week. I kept decayed. I think at one point I didn't say it, but I thought in my head decrepit. No, that's not the what? What? What's going on here? What's the word? Degraded. Batteries that have degraded. Apple has been slowing down the processors on these devices with degraded batteries so that they didn't unexpectedly shut down under some specific circumstances.
Right. Okay. And so specifically it was the iPhone SE, the iPhone 6, 6S, and then later in the year, they added in the iPhone 7.
Right.
So basically if your iPhone is one of those models and the battery can no longer charge beyond about 80% of its original capacity, it's considered shot. Battery is considered shot, yes. And so instead of just telling people, whoop, time for you to put new battery in, Apple did this software thing that spreads some of the more intensive processes out over multiple processor cycles so that you don't get those energy spikes that would cause the phone to spontaneously reboot.
Meaning they slowed your iPhone down.
Meaning they slowed your iPhone down.
They slowed your iPhone down. And this is the problem that Apple was addressing here was when, your phone would shut down as if it had lost all battery power, but then you plug it back in and it'd start back up and you've got, 50% capacity. You got 50% charge. Mm-hmm. And it seemed inexplicable. Your iPhone is inexplicably shutting down. This started to be a thing about what, like a year and a half ago?
Right. And Apple sorted it out. And so at the beginning of 2017, meaning
sort of it sorted it out.
Yeah. So in January 2017, Apple released iOS 10.2.1, which had their fix that did the slowdown thing. But only if your battery had hit that threshold where...
Degraded.
Yes, if the battery had degraded, it had degraded, so it was weaker, so it was worn out.
Listen, Jeff, I'm pretty excited about that word. So we're going to use it.
We're going to use it, yeah. So basically what you're saying is if Apple's in school, degraded... my pun's not working.
Oh yeah, that hurt.
That's okay. Like, I'll get it.
That just hurt. So anyway, it was only
degraded Apple low for the battery thing.
Oh man, that just hurt even worse.
Yeah, but I got it out.
Oh yeah, but I mean, is that really something you want to brag about?
Yeah, kind
anyway,
of.
Anyway. Only on some of these devices, Apple slowed the iPhone down so that it wouldn't do this inexplicable shutdown, which is brilliant. It's a brilliant solution, but they didn't tell us. And we've talked about that, right? They didn't tell us. And that was stupid. That was just insanely stupid for Apple not to tell us that it was doing that. It was just, I mean, it's just so stupid. And the reason why it's so stupid is because it fosters this myth that Apple slows down old iPhones to make you want to upgrade to a new iPhone.
Right.
And it feeds that myth, and that is a myth that's like that. That is just like of all the Apple hate out there and of all the misinformation out there, that particular myth has always just irked me intensely because it's so illogical.
Yep. And yet now here we are where all the people that were spouting this off before can go, aha, I told you so.
And that's what lots of people are doing. And in fact, Apple now has, as you reported this morning, 8 different lawsuits seeking class action status.
Mm-hmm. That's just in the United States.
Suing Apple for slowing down their old iPhones.
Mm-hmm. They're claiming that Apple misled consumers, and
which is true,
and they're claiming fraud,
which they may be able to prove.
That's going to be really hard to prove, I think. And the reason I think that's going to be hard to prove is because we're now kind of in new territory for the law. And the new territory is what constitutes appropriate standard practices for batteries in high-tech electronic devices. Yeah,
which again is what makes this so stupid on Apple's part. This is so self-inflicted. This is that self-harm. Like Apple is like doing the corporate equivalent, has been doing the corporate equivalent of cutting itself and then wearing a long sleeve shirt so no one could see. It's just, I mean, and I don't mean to make light of self-harm, and I don't mean to make light of cutting, because both of those can be, are serious issues for a shockingly high number of people, but it's this self-inflicted wound. And here's why we're talking about this again. There are 8 lawsuits. I have seen headlines that say Apple is being sued for slowing down old iPhones, which is technically true, but it only leaves out, you know, like the important bit. It's slowing down some old iPhones.
Right.
Right. And then I've seen headlines that say that Apple's being sued for slowing down iPhones with faulty batteries.
And the batteries and that's not are true not either. Faulty.
The battery, yeah, exactly. The batteries aren't faulty. Although you could say, I read at least one analysis, I think on Seeking Alpha, that said that was calling this a design flaw. That, in other words, Apple's pursuit of thinness at all costs led to a situation where batteries experiencing normal wear and tear couldn't handle the demands of the device.
On one hand, yes, but on the other hand, this is the sort of thing that eventually would happen anyhow because of the nature of the lithium ion battery technology.
So, might not have happened at 80% though. Starting at 80%.
Maybe not. I mean, 80% is considered from
yeah. But if they had bigger batteries,
that's a shot battery.
That's not the point. The point is that these batteries are so small because Apple is obsessed with thinness that they just didn't have enough capacity to be able to handle the load that the processor was putting on them. If they were bigger batteries at 80%, they might well have been able to handle this process. I'm not a battery engineer, so I could be wrong about that, but that feels right to me. So, you know, giddy up. Let's go.
You know, I love the giddy upness of it. I love the truthiness of it, but I'm not convinced that it would have made a substantial difference.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think that all those companies out there that aren't pursuing thinness like Apple is, and the fact that they're not having this problem, do you think that that's a coincidence, especially for devices that were designed infinitely less efficient than Apple's?
Well,
not infinitely. That's patently untrue, but it's still substantially less efficient, you know, than Apple does.
Okay. So there's a lot of variables that come into play here. And one of them is how many of those devices are still in use?
Yeah, okay, come on.
I think iPhones tend to stay in use a lot longer.
They
than
do, but you're grasping at straws. This has never been an issue to my knowledge on the Android side. Of course, maybe. Okay, all right. Let me actually back up. Let me bolster your angle. Maybe the folks don't notice them on the Android side because the devices just suck in the first place.
Which, of course, is a possibility. And some of those devices have user replaceable batteries. So, yeah, so true. Maybe
fewer as people, and fewer, though.
Yeah,
the Android and fewer world has largely followed Apple down the path of better cases, better form factors.
Yeah,
and non-user replaceable batteries.
So my point is, I don't think we have enough information to be able to say, well, we're not seeing these problems on Android. Therefore, this something because of the size of the battery.
But I'm going to stick to my gun. You may or may not be right. I may or may not be right. I don't know. Neither of us has the evidence to back up our thoughts on this. But I am comfortable saying that Apple's pursuit of thinness at all costs has played some kind of role in this. I could be wrong. But I can't prove it. It
seems plausible.
It's got the, as you said, it's got that truthiness factor, and there you have it. So here's where we come once again. This is like the slowest D's buildup of all time. The reason why we're talking about this again is that I believe that Apple loses these lawsuits, whether or not it loses these lawsuits. The PR hit that Apple is going to take over this nonsense is going to be enormous. The headlines are already damning. The stories are already damning. And all of it is feeding that belief out there that Apple slows down old iPhones to make you buy new ones.
Right. And that in and of itself is patently false.
Apple that in and of itself is, and yet Apple is feeding it. Apple is the one who's providing fuel. Apple went down to the fuel store and it brought some big fuel containers and it said, put some fuel in these containers.
But make it the most fiery fuel you have.
The fiery fuel. Exactly. Yeah. And then here, I brought some mason jars for you to put a little extra in because these are all the containers I've got. And then Apple drove down to the Apple hater bonfire where all the myth gatherers were. And then it threw that fuel on the fire and in secret in the dead of night. And then, walked away. Drove away because they were driving in my ridiculous extended analogy.
Probably in an electric car.
Probably. It just infuriates me. This is just such a stupid mistake.
The irony about the electric car they drove off in, the battery was degrading and couldn't hold more than 80% charge. So when they tried to gun it at the stoplight,
It died.
The car rebooted.
Yeah, and that's how they got caught.
That's how they got caught.
And that, folks, is how you spin a tail.
Boy, howdy.
So, yeah, big self-inflicted wound by Apple. They're going to lose whether or not they lose these lawsuits, because they're taking a huge PR hit even as we speak, and it's going to last for years and years and years and years, and it's just stupid.
So I think that you are only slightly misstating what's happening. You say Apple's going to lose these lawsuits regardless of whether or not they win or lose. I think you should change that to Apple has already lost these lawsuits regardless of whether or not they win or lose.
Has lost and is losing and will lose. How's that?
All right. I'll accept
that. Let's cover past, present, and future.
All right. I'll accept that. And yeah.
And it's just stupid. All they had to do was tell us what they were doing. And matter of fact, all they had to do was give us a flippable switch.
No.
Do you?
No. That is bad.
Why?
This needs to be something that users don't have control over, because as soon as you give them control over that, everyone's going to shut it off. And now Apple has a worse image problem, which is that all these people are running around with iPhones that keep crashing. And then you also have the problem of the battery is now going to wear out or become worse substantially faster, because you're doing more and more damage to the battery.
Yeah, okay, maybe. I would argue that if you gave users the choice, that's fine, as long as they were told that the battery needed to be replaced. Here you have two options. You can put this in a mode that will prolong. I actually think that most users, when given that information, would actually choose to have their devices not crash.
I think most
users, and that a lot of them would go and choose to have their batteries replaced.
I think what most users would do would be turn it off and then think, if they just keep plugging in their phone to keep it charged up all the time, that they fix the problem. And the thing is, even if you've charged it up all the way, but now your battery only holds 80%.
Apple could make that very clear in the wording. You're not giving people enough credit. And either way, Apple should have armed us with the information. That's the thing. Apple should have armed us with the information.
The information, and said, "Here's why we are doing this." And then it'd be very open and transparent. And then when people start crying foul about what Apple's doing, Apple would be in a much stronger and much better position, because they could say, "No, look, here's the science." And right now, while they can say, "No, look, here's the science," the damage has already been done.
Well, I mean, I think you're overthinking it. Like, Apple has this information. Apple has precisely the information it needs to alert customers. Mm-hmm. And by informing those customers, Apple could have turned this into a feature. Like, oh my God, iPhones can actually tell you when the battery needs to be replaced.
How cool is that? They can tell you when the battery needs to be replaced.
That's what I'm saying. Apple could have turned it into a feature instead of a problem.
No, wait, you're not getting what I'm saying. There is a feature on the iPhone where it will tell you when your battery needs to be replaced, but it's at a much lower threshold than where the battery is being managed through this new software thing.
But more specifically, Apple is using that information now without telling us. That's the thing. That's the thing where they could have turned it into a feature.
Yes, they absolutely could have turned it into a feature. And if they had said, "Look, we're doing this so that first your iPhone doesn't crash, but second, if you don't want to replace your battery right now, you still have usable life out of this. We just had to slow your iPhone down some to make that happen." And and by the way, you don't have to buy an iPhone as early as you thought, because this one still works. Now, of course, they wouldn't say that part, but the battery part, you know, it'd be like, "Hey, you can't afford to replace your battery right now. Look, we just extended your life. You're welcome."
Yeah, and again, I still think you're overthinking. I think they could actually say that your battery needs to be replaced, and your iPhone has been put into a broken battery mode. Go get it fixed. Go get it replaced.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's where you can do it. Links to authorized resellers or Apple stores.
Yeah, that would be totally fine.
Or authorized repair centers.
Yeah. Authorized Apple service centers.
And this whole thing just becomes cool. It becomes something. It's a feature. It's a feature like an iPhone. An iPhone's going to tell you when the battery needs to be replaced, and it's, you know, does it proactively.
And then the people that complain saying, oh, Apple's intentionally slowing our iPhones to make us buy new ones. Now, those people look like the jerks.
I don't think people would have ever gone that route.
Oh, I think a lot.
If they had done this,
I think a lot of
people, they wouldn't have associated this with that. They wouldn't have associated this battery issue with the myth that Apple slows down old iPhones.
I think a lot of people would have done just that. Because there's a lot of people out there that want anything to latch on to slam Apple.
Well, yeah, for sure.
And as it turns out, a lot of those people are using Apple products. So I think there's this would have been bad publicity either way, but the bad publicity of being very upfront about what they're doing, very transparent about what they're doing, would have been much better and much easier to manage than what they're seeing now. And it would be something that, had they done this back in January when iOS 10.2.1 came out, everyone would have already forgotten about it.
Yes. Yeah. It would have been very short lived. Yeah. And then what would happen when someone got that notification? It's like, oh yeah. You know, the people who knew would say, oh yeah, you should go replace your battery. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah.
So self-inflicted, Apple is losing these lawsuits, whether or not they go any further, whether or not any of them get class action status. Quite frankly, I think they will get class action status. And I think Apple's going to end up having to settle.
That's exactly what's going to happen. And the unfortunate thing is that the iPhone owners that participate in the class action lawsuit, they're not going to win as far as monetary settlement goes. It's just going to be the attorneys.
Yeah, that's always the case.
Yeah, which is disappointing.
That's always the case. Yeah, but, you know, the big loser will end up being Apple, because not only will they end up having to pay an amount of money that is insignificant to Apple, they will take much worse PR hit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. This was a bad decision on Apple's part. Not dealing with the battery issue the way they presented it, meaning they didn't. Yeah.
Yep. All right. That's my thoughts on that.
Okay.
It just makes me mad. It really makes me mad. It's just so stupid. And by the way, I am a tiny shareholder.
You're like normal height.
Yeah, fair enough. I have a very small stake in Apple.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it has never, ever influenced. Clearly it doesn't influence. I do not have a short position on Apple. It has never influenced my writing on Apple.
You know, based on some of the things you say about Apple, I'm inclined to believe you.
Yeah, I think the SEC. But anyway, the point is, I just want to be upfront.
That's really awesome of you.
Yeah, I suppose. Okay, so let's see here. You know what else? You know who else needs a self-help group? You have no idea where I'm going with this.
No, but I love that I'm along for the ride.
All of us, we're using social media.
Oh, holy crap. Boy, we need a 12-step program.
We do need a 12-step program. Let me actually find this fellow's name, because I can never remember it. They were pronouncing on CNBC. They were pronouncing his name.
Let's just go with his first name, Chamath.
Yeah, that's not quite how they were pronouncing it.
Oh,
it's Palihapit. He was born in Bangladesh, raised in Canada, and has spent his adult career in Silicon Valley. Seems like he's whip smart. And he was a former executive at Facebook. He's an engineer at Facebook, and he helped. I guess his initial purview over there was increasing users, increasing the size of the audience.
Okay.
But he left Facebook several years ago. He's been a VC since. He is a co-owner of the Golden State Warriors basketball team.
Okay.
And he's heavily vested in cryptocurrencies. He actually had something really clever to say on CNBC, and I can't remember exactly how he worded it, but he was basically saying that people should invest 1% of their net worth in cryptocurrencies in case they're not wrong, because the upside is so high.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting, but that's not why we're talking about him.
Okay.
Because he had something else to say.
Okay.
He said, and I quote, "Social media is ripping society apart."
That's a pretty damning statement, especially from someone that was an executive at Facebook.
Yeah, someone who helped make Facebook what it is. And
I thought it was really powerful when he said he actually feels guilty about what he did, being part of, of helping Facebook grow.
Yeah. And of course, you know, it made him rich, made him fabulously rich. Mm-hmm. His VC fund, by the way, investing companies that I forget the exact wording. I watched all this stuff yesterday. He didn't talk about his VC fund all that. That was all in the CNBC interview, which you didn't see, right?
No, I did not.
Yeah, his VC fund. Okay, I'm going to actually figure this out. Why don't you actually talk to us about what he said?
Okay, so basically, what he's saying in this interview, where he's asked about social media, is that the different social media networks that we're using have become tools of destruction.
And, oh my God. He has an investment in Palantir.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Which again is going to make him fabulously wealthy, but goodness gracious, talk about a company that I think is, has so much potential for the dark side.
Well, maybe we'll be listening to another interview from him in a few years where he talks about feeling guilty.
Yeah. The name of his VC fund, by the way, is Social Capital. Recapture our potential and open doors, surround ourselves with a more diverse set of experiences and prioritize a diverse set of things. Partnership of philanthropists. Oh my goodness, they're making it so hard for me to find information.
All right. Well, while you look, I'll keep talking about what he was saying. So he said that there's no like real healthy discourse on social media, that there's no fact checking, and that people aren't feeling a sense of repercussion for what they're doing. And so we're seeing this problem where society is just being ripped apart. And one of the examples that he offers up was a hoax that was posted on social media in India, and it led to lynchings. People were killed because they read this hoax, were out looking for people that were supposedly
that had perpetrated the supposed hoax.
Yes. And when they found people, they were lynching them.
I could see that happening here in the United States.
And honestly, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already. So that was just one example he offered about how the whole social media thing is so destructive. And he said he's actually disconnected from social media completely.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, here we are encouraging you to join our Facebook group. So
we're enablers, is what you're saying.
We are enablers. And it's interesting. I don't actually quite take I think there's a lot of truth in what this fellow says. By the way, okay, let me actually, I found Social Capital. Their mission is to advance humanity by solving the world's hardest problems. By harnessing technology to address core human needs, we aim to drive a bottom-up redistribution of power, capital, and opportunity. So that's what he's done with his wealth that was, you know, derived from some, at least some of it was derived from things that make him feel guilty now. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hats off.
All right, so that's cool.
I think that social media also has potential for good. And I think that the way people can reach out and form new connections has the potential for good. I think that the downsides that he see are also there. And I think that they could well tear society apart, but social media could also help build society up. It could.
Well, okay. So on the positive side, when I look at some of the things that social media has done, and I totally get that the example I'm going to offer doesn't jibe with everyone's political view. So I totally get it. But here's the deal. When you look at what was happening going into the last presidential election, and then after the election, when there were a large group of people that were very concerned about potential policy changes, and we started seeing the Women's March and all of these other public protests happening, it was social media that was instrumental in helping these what I consider to be a healthy use of freedom of speech. Because if you yeah. can't speak out comfortably against your own government, then you don't have freedom of speech. And social media helped make that possible.
Right. And social media even helps make that possible in some authoritarian states too. It can. Of course, you know, authoritarian states are doing everything they can to crack down on that. Mm-hmm. Possibility, but that's kind of a side issue. People are still able to use social media in ways to organize and speak. And you know, of course, then you have the silification aspect of social media, which Chamath did not address. But that's part of, I think, the problem, where liberals can hang out with liberals and conservatives can hang. This is especially here in the United States, where liberals can hang out with liberals and conservatives can hang out with conservatives, and we stop talking to each other. And that's a big
problem.
We enter into these feedback loops where all of our pre-existing biases are constantly confirmed. And that makes it more and more difficult for us to reach any kind of compromise that actually makes living possible, that makes society possible. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, that's an issue. That's an issue too. I mean, all right. So the other thing that he talked about that I think is, oh, so incredibly true. And we've seen that brought to life in the last year and a half, roughly. And that's the ability for malicious parties, or parties who think they're righteous, you know, which are usually one and the same, to use social media to control people.
Yes.
And to shape thought and to shape the discussion, and even to possibly send people on errands of evil, to wit the situation in India that he talked about. where people were getting all involved in a hoax that was being perpetrated on local media and ended up lynching victims that were, you know, without any kind of due process.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's horrible. And we are seeing that happen as we speak. And we have seen that happen as we speak with the Russian interference in not only our elections, but elections in Europe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who knows where else. The Kremlin decided several years ago that they could even the playing field where they're overmatched on the military front. And that's in large part because of the simple economics. And they could instead spend relatively little money and play havoc with their perceived adversaries. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they have been fomenting discord and chaos and hatred in many countries, not just the United States.
All right. I have a question for you. Do you think it's possible for some company to create a social network service that remains positive? So if you look at, say, Twitter, when Twitter started, it wasn't the cesspool of hate that we so often see today. But over time, it evolved.
Twitter is my second favorite social media platform.
Yeah, I do enjoy Twitter a lot, but I have to filter a lot now, and I skip over tons of stuff because the negativity in my feed is like really high.
Yeah, it really is. Instagram being my preferred is the social media platform where I spend the most time.
And yeah, Instagram feels like it's not succumbing to the negativity in the way that Twitter and Facebook have.
Well, you know, the Russians use Instagram too in their disinformation campaign in 2016.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it's not like it's immune. It's immune from some of these things that Chamath is talking about.
Right. I didn't I didn't mean to imply that I think Instagram is immune. It's just not suffering to the same extent that Twitter and Facebook are.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd agree with that. And I had a point. I don't know what it was. It's gone.
Oh, you like Instagram?
Okay, you were asking if a social media platform could be born that did not foster these, it's not quite how you put it, but that did not foster these forces of negativity that we're talking about. These forces of danger that we're talking
that's
about.
That's a really great paraphrase. Yes.
And here's part of the problem with social media. Social media removes the curators. Traditionally speaking, for good and for ill, at least here in the United States, the mainstream media, the media as a whole has been the curator of information, serving as editors and fact checkers and fact finders and investigators, etc. Now, mind you, what we think of as the modern media in the United States has not always been dedicated to you know what we consider journalistic standards mm-hmm. today. And certainly there was a lot of yellow journalism. That term was born in the late 19th century.
Right. Yellow journalism and muckraking.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like journalism has always been perfect, but the one way or another, there have always been some kind of curator, some kind of gatekeepers on information. And now, admittedly, that too can be used for ill. That too can be used by governments. It can be used by, you know, publishers. William Randolph Hearst mm-hmm. was certainly used his control over massive amounts of media to shape the public narrative as he saw fit. That has its own potential for problems. Mm-hmm. But the point is that we've always had some kind of gatekeepers for good and for ill. And with social media, there are no gatekeepers.
Okay, here's another problem that we have with social media, and it's personal accountability. And by that, I mean, when you put a screen between you and the rest of the world, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to say and do things that can be harmful that you wouldn't otherwise say or do if you were in a public setting.
Yeah, I see jackanapes on Twitter, for instance, who regularly peddle easily disprovable things. And are never held accountable. Like, their followers don't care,
right? And there's people out there that are saying hateful, horrible things to other people without any repercussions,
right? Well, so that is like an aspect. What there's an aspect of anonymity that plays into what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I'm talking about is even people who are not hiding behind any kind of anonymity, who actually use their true personas, and they peddle easily disprovable lies, and they never get called to account by their own followers. Their own followers don't care about the easily disprovable lies. Well, so it's two sides of the same coin there.
Mm-hmm. And it's not something that I see an easy solution for.
No, it really isn't. And because with the sheer volume of communication, do we want algorithms being our gatekeepers? And I have an easy answer to that.
No.
F no. And really came close to either mature rating or some editing.
I can't wait to figure out what options A through E were, since you chose F no.
Frack no. No, I don't want computers deciding what is fake news and not. I don't want computers deciding what is hate speech and what isn't. You know what? What makes the most sense is if AI and neural nets and machine learning are used to identify problematic posts, but humans make decisions.
That's probably with current technology, the best we could hope for.
Yeah. I mean, and it's really difficult. So let me throw another aspect of that. Do we want Facebook, a corporation? Do we want any corporation deciding what is going to be allowed and what isn't? I mean, Facebook has proven that it will lie, that it will deliberately choose posts that are positive or negative just to see what it does to us. You know, fill our feeds with nothing but negative stories or nothing but positive stories just to see how we react.
Yeah.
Do we want that company deciding what the hell we can see and what information we get?
I'm not comfortable with that.
No, I don't want Google doing it. I don't even want Apple doing it, as much as I love Apple, as much as I actually trust Apple in so many different ways.
All right, I'm going to loop back to the question that I asked you and offer up my own answer, which is okay. No, I do not believe with the current state of technology that we can create a social media service that does not eventually devolve into the same sort of anger and misinformation and abuse that we're seeing on Twitter and Facebook today.
So, I think it's possible. But I don't see the, I mean, like, for one thing, where's the money in it? So who's going to develop it, and what technology is going to be used to develop it? I know, Jeff, you've heard me, and I guess longtime listeners have heard me mention this fellow before, but there's a writer named Dan Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
He writes science fiction. He writes horror. He writes hardboiled detective stories. He writes sort of historical fiction dramas. The Terror, by the way, was a really good book. I really enjoyed The Terror. think there's a movie coming out called The Terror. And it's not based on his book, but it's about the same ship. And Dan Simmons, my favorite book from Dan Simmons is, it's actually two books, The Hyperion and The Fall of Hyperion, mm-hmm. which I think I've given you one of those, right? Almost positive I did. You're probably on page 20 or 30 now, because it was about 10 years ago that I gave it to you.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do remember now. Hyperion. Yes. I do remember.
Yeah. You're like page 20 or 30? Sound about right?
If you want me to go into the other room, grab the book, I can check where the bookmark is.
Yeah.
That's probably about right.
Yeah. You're so ridiculous. So in Hyperion, which was written, I think, in 1989, or was published even in 1989, maybe 1990, so before the internet, he had something called the All Thing. And the book was set like 700-800 years in the future. Mm-hmm. Right? So, you know, society is completely different. The Earth is gone. We're out in the stars. And the All Thing was basically the internet, and the All Thing like voted on stuff. Like the All Thing essentially had kind of a quasi voice in government. And what the All Thing was essentially consensus, right? So, you know, people participating in the All Thing, which is, you know, like a whole lot of people, they would, he never expressed that. Dan is very, very good at leaving the wizards, leaving the magic to the wizards. Mm-hmm. Right. So he doesn't often explain things, and his writing is extremely immersive because of that. And the All Things, the All Thing was, like I said, essentially one aspect of the All Thing was people reaching consensus on something. And maybe that is. Of course, you know, I mean, people were educated in his world.
Okay, so I'm going to bring up another story that shows where that concept could go horribly wrong.
Okay.
And it's from a TV series that is surprisingly really good. And it's The Orville, Seth MacFarlane's series.
Okay.
So in one of the episodes, they end up on this planet where social media is the system. It's the governing system. It's the legal system. And so everything is determined by consensus through social media, so much so that every person, when they turn 18, is issued a badge. And the badge shows their likes and dislikes. And so if someone likes something that you do, they give you a like.
Did you see The Circle, the movie?
No, but
I just watched it yesterday.
I heard some of the concepts are similar.
Yeah, similar. Yeah, I'm not saying he copied it, but I mean, it certainly is echoes some of the same themes.
Yeah. So you have this society where this social media is how everything is determined. And one of the characters from the ship ends up running afoul of the law and has no idea how the legal system works and is in a really bad place because their life is being determined by social media likes and dislikes. And I mean, you watch the episode and it's like, holy crap, this is really scary.
Yeah, that's fine. Certainly there's potential for all kinds of awfulness for consensus, because, you know, at one time the consensus was in this country that slavery was okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, I'm not agreeing with the concept of slavery, but yes, there was a point when that was an accepted part of our society.
For most of humanity, the consensus has been that women should have no power, no rights. That's been a consensus opinion for a very, very long time.
Which is yet another horrible opinion.
Yeah. And we, you know, so consensus isn't necessarily, it's not a cure all. That's for sure. That's right. Yeah. So to answer your question, I don't know. I don't like what Facebook is doing to us. I think that Twitter is less problematic, but there are still problems with Twitter. Mm-hmm. I think there's potential for shenanigans even in a platform like Instagram. I don't know what the solutions are. No one has come up with any solutions. I certainly wish Mark Zuckerberg would learn the difference between what he can do and what he should do.
Well, that would be really awesome.
And I also wish that we had some kind of frickin' balance to the idea that that shareholder value essentially is the most important thing. Increasing shareholder value is the most important thing when it comes to the existence of corporations.
Yeah.
So, you know, that leads to shenanigans too. You know, I hate the entire we are the product economy that has been ushered into existence by Google and Facebook. Not that they're alone. So I had an interesting thought. Did you actually read my piece on the Apple's most important software?
Yeah, and it's funny because it's like you just read my mind because I was just going to ask you about that because we only have a few minutes left.
Yeah, I know. I named Animoji as one of Apple's most important software announcements. And of course, I immediately got some pushback. Our friend Gooey Duck, who has been a reader for, golly, since the beginning. Mm-hmm. Of TMO, he's been with us forever, and I love him.
So he's been a reader longer than I've been writing for TMO, which means he's from the before time.
Yes, he is. He said a comment that Animoji is a stupid parlor trick that utterly trivializes facial recognition, and I just utterly disagree with him because I think that Animoji. Here's my case for Animoji, and this ties into what we're talking about. Here's my case for Animoji. Animoji makes us smile.
Yes.
It's another way for people to communicate, and people communicating is a great thing.
I agree.
People smiling
is a great thing. And adding in a level to the communication where it's easier to read intent, because that's part of how we communicate with each other. It's through body movement, facial expression, and you lose that in so many forms of electronic communication.
Yes. And the reason why the Animoji plays into this conversation. So again, I want to make the case that Animoji is important because it's new. It's novel. It's fun. It makes people smile. It adds new ways in which people can communicate. For instance, I find I have entire conversations with emoji sometimes. Right. I can say something with emoji with four emojis that would take a much longer time to type out. And it's instantly understandable with emoji.
Right. And especially if you really know the person you're communicating with.
Yes.
I mean, you can say a lot with just a few symbols. Oh,
you can
see, yes, cuneiform for a standard language.
Well, but that's just it. Emoji doesn't replace text. And I love words. I live for words. Mm-hmm. But emoji to me is an added arsenal to words. Because sometimes an emoji says something better than actual words can. If you disagree with that, that's fine. You're just wrong.
Yeah. So you need to send Brian an angry emoji.
Exactly. Or tell me I'm an idiot. That's fine too. Animoji is yet another tool in our ability to communicate all through iMessage. Mm-hmm. And here's where this ties into this conversation about Chamath.
Okay.
Apple is turning iMessage into a social networking platform. And this by a company who everyone has long acknowledged it, really even Apple itself, that sucks at social networking.
You know, okay, so Apple in the social networking arena, which, yeah, I agree. This is what they are doing with the tools they're making. To me, it feels more like a hybrid social media because instead of being this thing like Twitter or Facebook where people can just follow you.
Yes.
And you may not know who's following you. It becomes more of a direct interaction between one person and another or a group of people. So it's very focused. And so in that sense, yes, I think that has a potential to maintain a more positive perspective. Although now you are also dealing with the potential of really siloing yourself and talking to your echo chamber, which isn't always healthy.
Right. Of course. Right. I like hybrid social network because I mean, it's accurate because it's not one to all or one to many. Mm-hmm. It is one to one or even one to very specifically your friends. And it is much more of an interactive, much more of a conversation versus like what, as you said, just a following, just a consumption device. Right. So like iMessage is a lot less about broadcasting than it is about communicating. You know, and now that even includes the ability I'm gonna have to write about this. You know, like iMessage is Apple's stealth move into social networking and that it's about broadcasting, not communicating. I got to remember that line because that's a good line.
Well, luckily and, I mean, we've got it recorded.
Yeah, but you know, it's not like I listen to the show.
Hey, listeners, would you send Brian a message and send him that line because he doesn't listen to the show?
Please, please. And,
just pop it on our Facebook page.
You can send money to one another,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You can send, like one of the things I like to do is for the people that I'm closest to, if I'm looking for an image that I know that I sent them, I can like go back through and like find every image that I've sent or received,
mm-hmm.
you know, every image in that thread, it's all right there. You know, you can actually see where one another is if you choose to do so. You can, the ability to send stickers is fun and useful and informative.
Yes.
Right. The ability to use Apple's emoji integration is excellent on the iOS versions. It's emoji integration on the Mac.
Is sucks
balls. Don't get me started on that. And the touch stuff, the ability to send your heartbeat and to send the fire thing and to send kisses and to send messages with effects, right? All of these things make it a fantastic communication platform.
Okay, so now I want to go back to the emoji thing real quick, even though I'm looking at the clock and I know we only have a couple of minutes left, but whatever. So you talked about an emoji as one of the mm-hmm. most important software products of 2017 for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally agree with your reasoning. And I'm going to add in something else, which takes it down the more technical path, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I think an emoji is a first step for Apple where they are making our electronic interactions more personal. And the whole facial tracking thing, they're easing us into what they're going to do and learning how we're using it by giving us the fun, easy to do thing with an emoji. And I think over time, this is going to become more sophisticated and they're going to find ways to use this technology to bring people closer together for communication. Even when we still have the physical barriers of distance between us, but they will find ways to make us feel closer. And this is just a first step towards that.
Yeah, I very much agree with that. I very much agree with that. And, you know, this is the first iteration of an emoji, and it's limited only to iPhone 10 because iPhone 10 is the only device that can do the facial tracking in Apple's product line. We're going to see a lot of changes. For one thing, I expect to see better actual mapping.
Yeah, of course, you know, it's going to get better
at some point. You know, the Animoji should become more and more expressive as time goes by, and it'll be more and more useful. In my opinion, anything that makes it easier for us to communicate with one another
mm-hmm.
is good.
Sure, I am totally with you.
Do we, should we give a brief mention of the other software things?
Sure. We'll run over a little bit, but I think people love us enough that they're okay with that. So what are your other most important software products?
ARKit, simply because, Apple is arming, a lot more developers than would otherwise have access to creating their own AR tools.
I'm totally with you on ARKit.
And the ARKit is a stepping stone. It's a transition product that is taking iOS further than iPhone and iPad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. It's going to this is part of Apple's own efforts to obsolete its own products.
And not in a bad way.
No, not in a bad way. In a great way.
Yeah.
In an absolutely fantastic way. And, ARKit's going to be a very big deal. And, you know, I think it's important to note that the company that really that introduced AR to the mainstream, which would be Niantic, They're making their own product better, Pokemon Go. They're making it better with Apple's ARKit.
Yes. Which is
and cool. they're the ones who introduced the concept of AR to a lot of people.
That's true. Pokemon Go is for many people their very first experience with augmented reality, and it was really cool.
Yeah. Apple Pay Cash, simply because I think it's going to be part of the ongoing transformation of the way money changes hands.
Okay.
And it's going to be a big part of what Apple is doing in the future. I also named Logic Pro 10 updates as one of Apple's five most important products.
All right. And I wanted to ask you about that. Why a bunch of software updates or a handful of updates for Logic Pro?
Because it felt like Apple was abandoning, we've all had worries that Apple is abandoning the Mac.
Okay. So you're seeing these updates as evidence from Apple that they are still paying attention to their other products.
Correct.
Okay.
And we saw several Logic Pro 10 updates that were actually meaningful this year. And we saw more than one throughout the year. I think there were actually four, but one of those, I think, was really just for the iMac Pro. So that doesn't count. But there are three of them that actually brought some real new features to the product. And that, to me, is hopefully symbolic of Apple's broader attention to the Mac.
Cool. Okay.
And then I named iPhone 10 as one of Apple's most important software products.
Just to make sure you understand the difference between software and hardware.
Yeah, well, I wrote in the pieces. I know what you're thinking. iPhone 10 isn't software, you numbnut. And you're right, it's not, and I am.
Okay, so you went with poetic license.
Well, again, the iPhone 10 is the stand-in for the subset of iOS 11 that is specific to iPhone 10. So Apple,
how clever of you.
Apple had to come up with a way to have to get rid of the home button. Right? And also to get rid of Touch ID because it was getting rid of the home button. Mm-hmm. And to meet that challenge, Apple came up with Face ID and also came up with new gestures that make a home button unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And these were significant changes, and Apple just sort of did them, and it's all just kind of part and parcel for Apple's ability to make incredibly difficult things look easy.
And that's the trick right there. If you take something that's really complex and really difficult and make it appear simple to the end user, then you've succeeded.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, iPhone 10, one of Apple's most important software releases in 2017, and I'm going to stand by that. So there you have it.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what your list of most important software products for 2018 is. And I'm here's a spoiler for you. I'm hoping it includes iWork and iTunes.
Huh. Yeah, I'm hoping to. By the way, John Keat intends to call me an idiot on Pop.0 about this very topic.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so, you know, something to look forward to.
Yeah, that's going to be really exciting. All right. I don't think I've ever called you an idiot.
You never thought it? I'm not trying hard enough. You never even thought it.
No, I have not even thought it. I have, at times, questioned your logic or reasoning and felt that you were very wrong, but never an idiot.
And I've never called you an idiot in my mind either, Jeff Gamet.
That is so swell. And I and I so believe you.
I can't recall. I can't recall ever having thought that about you.
I know you well enough. I would have been really surprised if you had done such a thing. That is so not you.
Dude, I call people idiots all the time. What are you talking about?
That's not the same thing.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. So listen, sorry to keep you waiting a little over long there, folks. And also sorry that I can no longer speak English.
Yeah. Well, we all have our crosses to bear, Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com or head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/group/Context Machine. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good folks at the Mac Observer. Right? This is true, isn't it?
This is true.
Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly, the bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. All true.
All true.
That's all for this week. Also true.
Yes. And hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.